We've been looking at just one chapter at a time as we've been going through Genesis, and some of those chapters were so full of so many things that was certainly all we could cover. We're going to try tonight to actually tackle two chapters, chapters 7 and 8. These are two of the chapters that involve the flood. We looked at chapter 6 last week. I believe that we can tackle these two chapters and still have a couple minutes left over to get out on time. I won't complain about that. But if as we're heading through chapter 7, it looks like we're running out of time, we'll just stop a little early and save chapter 8 for next time. But I think that the material here will allow us to do this. I'm reminded as we think about Noah's flood, and I guess it's not really fair to call it Noah's flood because he didn't have anything to do with it except survive it. But when God flooded the world in Noah's time, as we think about that, it's an amazing thing to us. And I remember one situation that was told, and I know it was just one of those preacher stories, but there was a fellow who had been through a flood. It was, as I recall the story, in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. But it could have been a lot of places this summer where they experienced flooding. And he had survived that flood, and he would tell the story of the flood that he had survived. And as he got older and the flood got further and further back there, his stories got more and more elaborate. We have a tendency to exaggerate a little bit with our stories. And his stories began to become almost legendary because of all the things that happened to him during that flood. And come to pass, he passed away and he was up in heaven. And it was told that there was going to be a big meeting and people were going to be able to talk and to share. And he asked Peter, "Well, could I tell my story about the Johnstown flood?" And Peter said, "Well, yeah, you certainly can, but remember, Noah will be in the audience." So sometimes we think that bad things have happened to us, or that great things have happened to us, and sometimes we don't understand how truly great, or how truly bad, or how truly powerful certain things and certain events could have been. When we think about Noah's flood, we think about a global flood. We see how much destruction and damage there is from a local flood. We've had plenty of experience with that and seen the destruction and the devastation. And yet, to think about a flood that covered the whole earth, that's a pretty amazing thing to think about. And we want to look at that a little bit in depth this evening. Before we get started, I want to ask you one good question, though. How many of every animal did Moses take on the ark? Don's got it right. Zero over here, he says. None. No, Moses didn't build the ark. Sometimes you can catch people with that sometimes, right after you have them turn to Hezekiah chapter 4, where they can read about that. But we know he didn't take any. But let's ask the question more realistically. How many animals of each kind did Noah take on the ark? What do we always teach the children? We say, well, there was two of each. You know, they went in two by two. Well, we're going to challenge that tonight with what Genesis chapter 7 tells us. We're going to look at that a little more closely. First of all, we want to notice in Genesis chapter 7 and verse number 1, I've heard some debate on this, but the King James says here, "The Lord said unto Noah, Come, thou and all thy house into the ark, for I have seen thee righteous before me in this generation." God will never take His children somewhere that He won't go with them. The Lord didn't send Noah off to the ark alone. The Lord was already inside the ark and He said, "Come." Now we know that God is omnipresent. He's everywhere anyway. But He invited Noah to come into the ark with Him. God wasn't going to leave Noah alone throughout this experience. And we need to understand that as Christians today. God is never going to leave us alone to face the difficulties of this life. If you've ever seen the Footprints poem, I'm reminded of that poem every time I read this verse. The man dreamed about the footprints on the sand, and there were two footprints, him walking with Jesus along the way, and then of course at one section there was only one set of footprints, and he realized that that was during one of the most difficult times of his life. And so then he asked the Lord, "Lord, why was it that during the most difficult time of my life you left me alone and there was only one set of footprints there?" And the Lord said, "I didn't leave you alone. That was the time I was carrying you." And that little poem, even though it is just a little poem, it reminds me that the Lord doesn't leave us to face the struggles of this life alone. The promise that Jesus gave His disciples when He left this earth, and He said, "Lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the world." Jesus is here with us. He's here tonight as we worship and as we study. He's with us each and every day. For some of us, we need to remember that when we go through our daily activities, and maybe we wouldn't do or say some of the things that we do or say. Not only is He with us, He can read the very thoughts and intents of our hearts. So maybe we wouldn't think and feel some of the things that we think and feel if we would realize that Jesus is there with us and knows those things. But God did not leave Noah alone. He was with Noah. And sometimes people miss out on that idea. But then I want us to notice in verses 2 and 3, God says that of every clean beast that you shall take to you by sevens, the male and his female, and of beasts that are not clean by two, the male and his female. Now that latter part of that is where we get the idea that He took two of every kind of animal. But let's look at the whole passage and let's look at the grammar that the Bible uses. Sometimes grammar is pretty important. And here He says, of the clean beasts, you're going to take seven. A male and his female. You want to try to divide seven into male and a female? That won't work. So what God is saying here is you're going to take seven. Seven male, seven female. Well, then when we apply that logic then to the second part, the unclean animals by two, the male and the female. We got four animals of the unclean kind. Would have been quite a risk for God to just put two animals on that ark of one particular kind. How easy it would have been for one of them to die after they got off the ark, and then that species is extinct. But with four, you've got a better chance of survival. Now, obviously, some animals have gone extinct. They don't exist on this earth anymore. But He doubled the chance of survival by adding that 14 clean and four of the unclean. In verse 3, then He says, of the fowls of the air by sevens, the male and the female. So 14 of all the different kinds of birds. Now, there with the birds, He didn't make a distinction between the clean and the unclean birds. He just said, if it's a bird that flies in the air, you take 14 of them. Seven male, seven female. And so, here He says, there's a reason that He's putting more birds. We think, well, why would you want more birds? Well, look to what it says. To keep seed alive on the face of the earth. Birds are one of the primary ways, other than farming with human beings, birds are one of the primary ways that the seed is spread from one place to another. And so having seven of the male and female, 14 of the birds, helps to have a larger population of birds to spread the seeds of all the wild plants that are out there. So we notice that. Now then He's telling Noah, you go get in the ark. At this point, the ark's already been built. We studied that last week, but now we're looking. This is the 7-day warning. 1 week till the flood. He says, in 7 days, and I will cause it to rain upon the earth. And he even says, I'm going to cause it to rain for 40 days and 40 nights. That's a lot of rain. And every living substance that I have made, I will destroy from off the face of the earth. Now, when he says living substance, he's talking about those things that breathe. He's not talking about the fish, and he's not talking about the plants. He's talking about the things that breathe. And he clarifies that in a later verse where he says, everything in which is the breath of life. He says that in a later verse. But this is 7 days. And so Noah is 600 years old. He takes his family into the ark. The animals are in the ark. The food is in the ark. 7 days later, here comes the rain. Verse 11 tells us when that occurred. On the 600th year of Noah's life, the second month, the 17th day, the fountains of the deep opened up, and the windows of heaven opened up. Let me think about that. There was water coming up and water coming down. You'd need a lot of water. Scientists have estimated that if the earth today were completely filled with as many clouds as you could get up there, and it all rained down, it would be enough to give less than 1 inch of rain over the whole earth. Well, I guarantee you there was more than 1 inch of rain in Noah's day. God provided enough water to cover the entire earth. And the fact that Noah takes the animals in the ark with him is one of the evidences of that. Now let's think about that for a minute. When we've had flooding, people get in their boats, or they get in their cars and leave before the flood gets there, or they get out. But do they bother to take all the different kinds of animals with them? No, because it's just a local flood. Those animals 50 miles away or 100 miles away or on another continent are going to be fine. They don't need to be rescued because it's not flooding there. If it were a local flood, as some of the Bible skeptics have claimed, there would have been no need whatsoever for Noah to load a bunch of animals on the boat. Because after the local flood is over, animals come back. But the fact that he needed to load every kind of animal onto the ark lets us know that this was a global flood. If he didn't put those animals on the ark, there wouldn't be any animals today. They would all be dead. At least all of the land animals, the sea animals that can breathe underwater, fish and things like that, would still be able to survive. But the land animals would have all died. This was not a local flood, and we're going to see that even more clearly as we go along through here as well. But remember that in verse 11, that 600th year, the second month, and the 17th day, that's when the rain started. Now, Noah had already been in the ark for 7 days before that. God told him, you go ahead and get in the ark, because in 7 days, it's going to come. So he'd been in the ark for 7 days, waiting for the flood to come, waiting for the rains to fall. But there was more than just rain. Those fountains of the deep that broke up. Some people believe that refers to volcanic activity. I believe it probably has something to do with those water, those freshwater springs that we still have at the bottom of the ocean today. Even though the ocean is salt water, there are springs of fresh water that come up out of the ground down there. And some of that would have increased the water levels as well as the rain that fell. Some have suggested that there was even, before the flood, a canopy of water surrounding the atmosphere of the earth, and that all of that came down. And there certainly could be some indication of that back in Genesis 1 and 2 when he talked about the creation on the day where he separated the waters from the waters, and he put waters above the firmament, that's above the sky, and waters below the sky. And they say, well, that was he put some water up there out above the sky around the earth. Well, we weren't there. We didn't see it, so we don't know for sure. But it is within the realm of possibility, certainly. But then as we look on, the rain was on the earth for 40 days, verse 12 tells us. Noah and his family had entered in. All the animals had entered in. the Lord shut the door. Can you imagine how many people, when the rain actually began to fall, wanted to get in that boat? The same people who were mocking at Noah and making fun of him for being a fool, building a boat in the middle of dry land when there's no water around, those very same people would have desperately wanted to get in that boat when the water started to fall. And Noah, being a good person and being compassionate, as most good people are, probably would have made the mistake of letting some of them in if he had had power over that. I mean, most of us would. We do it all the time. We help people in lots of different ways. Family members, maybe. Maybe Noah's brother, maybe his cousin, maybe, oh, well, I can let them in. It'll be okay. He might have made that mistake. But you see, the Lord shut the door. And nobody could open it. Noah couldn't open it. The people outside couldn't open it. That door was shut. The same thing is true today of salvation. Today, salvation is open. The door to salvation is open. And all that enter through Jesus Christ, He said, I am the door. All that enter freely may enter. But one day, God's going to shut that door. It'll be all over. It'll be too late. And on that day, on Judgment Day, there will be millions, billions even, of people screaming and begging and crying. But it'll be too late. The door will have been shut. Just as it was shut on all of these people. How often people talk about God's mercy and grace, but they forget He's a God of His Word. If He says He's going to do something, He does it. He said He was going to destroy everything with this flood, and He destroyed it. And yet people today still are not afraid. They're not afraid at all. The flood rose for those 40 days during which time it was raining. The ark floated. Verse 19 says, the high hills were covered under the whole heaven. Notice that. The high hills under the whole heaven. Not just the high hills in Noah's little area of the world. The high hills everywhere. And then he goes on in verse 20. He says, the mountains, not just the high hills, but the mountains now are covered to a depth of 15 cubits. It's interesting that it specifies that. Do you remember the size that the ark was? The height of it was 30 cubits. Now, a barge-like ship, like the ark would have been, when it's fully loaded, sinks down into the water. We call that the draft of the ship. Sinks down in the water up to half of its height. It can sink halfway down. Well, what's half of 30? 15. The high mountains were covered by water to a depth of 15 cubits so the ark could go over the mountains and not even scrape bottom. That's pretty amazing. That's a lot of water. That is a lot of water. And yet, God planned it. He knew what He was going to do. It wasn't an accident that the floodwaters came up enough to allow the ark to float above the highest of the mountains. But it was all of the mountains. Not just a hill here or there. It was all of them. Of course, man and animals died. Verse 22 is the one. All in whose nostrils was the breath of life of all that was in the dry land died. There again, that lets us know the fish were okay. They were in the water. They can breathe underwater. But everything on land who had the breath of life, that was it. They were done for. Even the birds. And I said, well, the birds could fly. Well, how long can a bird fly? At some point it's got to land. Where would it land if there was no land? So even the birds. And that's why Noah had to take the birds into the ark with him. And only Noah and those that were with him in the ark remained alive. The waters prevailed upon the earth 150 days. So for 150 days, the whole earth was covered with water. Chapter 8 and verse 1 then says that God remembered Noah. Now, sometimes we have a problem with that. We say, well, what? Had God forgotten about Noah? No. It doesn't mean that God forgot about him. God knows all things, and he didn't forget. But God turned his attention back to Noah and his situation. And he begins to work. The wind blew. The water began to recede. The fountains of the deep were closed. The windows of heaven were stopped. No more rain, no more water coming. And so the water began to recede off the land. And they receded so much so that after that 150 days, the ark came to rest. In the seventh month, in the 17th day of the month, it landed in the mountains of Ararat. Now, there is one mountain called Mount Ararat today, and everybody's up there on that mountain looking for the ark. But the Bible never says that the ark landed on Mount Ararat. It said it landed in the mountains of Ararat. That's a whole chain. That's kind of like if we said, well, it landed in the Rocky Mountains. Well, that could be anywhere from Mexico to Canada. The Rocky Mountains is huge. It's hundreds of miles of mountains. Well, the mountains of Ararat's a large area. So they're focused on one mountain looking for Noah's Ark. If they ever find it, I'll be surprised. I suppose it's possible. It might be up there somewhere. But they're just looking in one mountain for this thing. But instead, it's the case that the ark had come to rest. Now, even though it had come to a rest, remember the water was 15 cubits above the mountain, so even if it came down 2 or 3 cubits, the ark could have landed on the top of a high mountain, and the mountain itself could have still been underwater. And so the water began to recede and recede and recede. It decreased continually, verse 5 says, so that in the 10th month, so almost 3 months later, at least 2.5 months later, after the ark came to rest, finally the tops of the mountains started to be seen. So it's now been 10 months, almost, well, 8, from the 600th year in the second month, in the 17th day. So it's been almost 8 months now that Noah's been in the ark, and finally the top of the mountains is showing out from above the water. And so here we are then. What's Noah going to do? Well, he finally sends out, he waits 40 more days, and he sends out a raven. Well, the raven never comes back. So he sends out a dove. Well, the dove goes out, and the dove returns. 7 days later, he sends the dove out again. The dove goes out, stays out all day this time, comes back with an olive branch. You ever wonder why the olive branch is the international symbol of peace? After a flood where the whole world was destroyed, here comes the dove, which is another symbol of peace, with the olive branch. Things are getting better. There's peace between God and man once again. It's amazing how these things, even people who don't believe in the Bible, they see a dove with an olive branch and they think, oh, isn't that wonderful? Well, I bet they didn't think it's nearly as wonderful as what Noah thought it was when he first saw it. Oh, there's living plants out there. There's something alive outside this boat. Well, the dove comes back that evening with the olive leaves. So 7 days later, he sends the dove out again, and the dove doesn't come back this time. Then Noah removes the King James says, the covering. And what exactly that covering is, whether it was, it talked about him opening a window once before, that's some sort of covering of a window. But he opened up, looked out, and he sees dry ground around. The water had finally receded enough that there was dry ground. This was when he was 601 years old, the first month, the first day of the month. But he didn't get out of the boat yet. Still in the boat. Finally, in verse 14, in the second month, the 27th day of the month, the earth was finally dried, and God said to Noah in verse 16, go forth out of the ark, you and your wife, your sons and their wives, and bring forth with you every living thing that's with you. Finally, Noah gets to come out. Noah was in the ark for a year and 17 days, give or take a day. That's a long time to be cooped up in a boat. That was a big boat. So they weren't claustrophobic in there. I mean, it was huge. We talked about it, but it's as big as a football field and a half long and half as wide as a football field. And there were three different decks. So if Shem and his wife were having a little spat, they could get far away from each other and not be a problem to each other and then get back together later. That could work out. But it was a long time to be in there and not be able to get out and about. What an amazing thing this flood was. Then we see, after they get out of the flood, out of the ark from after the flood, some of the greatest promises that God ever makes. Not the greatest. There are certainly greater ones like heaven and so forth, but these are some great promises. And we're going to look at those real quick. We just got a couple of them to look at. Noah comes out of the ark, and verse 20 we find out why he needed to take so many of the clean animals. Noah built an altar to the Lord, and he took of every clean beast and of every clean fowl and offered burnt offerings on that altar. So right there, some of those animals died. Poor little animals. But Noah needed to let God know, I love you and thank you for saving me and I'm still going to worship you. And so, what if God had only put two clean animals on the boat? But when Noah got off and killed one of them, guess what? That's the end of the clean animals. God knew what he was doing. That's why he had 14 of each animal. 14 sheep, 14 cows, 14 doves. 14. He had 14 of all of these different animals because he knew they were, first of all, animals that were going to be eaten. Secondly, he knew they were animals that were going to be sacrificed. And then, of course, third, he knew that some of them were just going to die or get killed by other natural causes. So he plans ahead. He thinks about these things. It says in verse 21 that the Lord smelled the sweet savor, and the Lord said in his heart, I will not again curse the ground anymore for man's sake. For the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I again smite anymore every living thing as I have done. Isn't that a great thing that the Lord decided? Aren't we glad? He was ever going to flood the whole earth again. And then in verse 22, while the earth remains, as long as this earth is here, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease. This is one of the verses I take comfort in when I hear the global warming alarmists tell us that it's all going to come to an end because it's going to be global warming. There's not going to be any more winter and we're all going to die. God promised there's going to be seed time and harvest. There's going to be cold and heat. There's going to be winter and summer. It's going to continue. The seasons and the pattern of that is going to continue as long as this earth is here. We don't have to be afraid. That's one of the wonderful things about all of God's promises is that God's promises help us to not have fear in our lives. If we trust Him and if we believe Him, then when He says something that it's true, then we don't have to be afraid of all the things that people say. An amazing event. Truly one of a kind. There's never been another flood, and there never will be another flood like the one in Noah's day. Now, that doesn't mean, when he says, I'm not going to send a flood, it doesn't mean that there's not going to be flood. We know there's a flood somewhere on this earth every year. Several places, usually, every year are flooded. But he's never going to flood the whole thing again. He's never going to destroy the whole thing with water again. He's going to clarify that a little more in chapter 9. But remember that Noah was saved from these events because back in chapter 7 and verse 5 it says that Noah did all the Lord commanded. He didn't let his age be an excuse. I saw one time on Things to Learn from Noah and the Flood, one of the things that they said was, stay in good shape. God may ask you to do something important when you're 500 years old. Well, I doubt that any of us will make it to 500, but we do need to understand that. God does not accept, well, I'm too old as an excuse. Noah says, well, I'm 500 years old. Why don't you let my sons do that? They're young. They can do that. No. No, no. You do it. So let's not look for excuses, but instead look for ways that we can do all the Lord commands us. And if we'll do that, He'll bless us just like He blessed Noah. And He's made promises. Now the difference in these promises that God made is they were not conditional promises. Many times God makes conditional promises where He says, I'll do this if you do this. In this case, when it came to the not flooding the world again and the day and night and heat and cold and those things, seed time and harvest, when it came to those, there was no condition. He didn't say, well, if man will act better, then I'll... No. He just said, I'm not ever going to do it again. That's a blanket promise. There's no doubt about that one. And that's good news, because if He had made it conditional, we'd have probably been flooded out four or five more times since then, the way people are. But we need to be assured that God is a God of His Word. He cares about His people. He protects His people. He watches out for His people. He warns His people of the dangers that are there. He helps them to prepare for those dangers if they'll listen to Him. We talked about that this morning in our class on wisdom. We've got to listen to that wisdom for it to do us any good. For those of you here tonight, have you been trusting in God? Do you believe His promises to you? Are you doing all you can to obey His commands in your life? Or are you counting on yourself? I don't need Him. I can do it myself. No, you can't. None of us can. We need God. We talked last week about the fact that even though Noah was just, righteous, upright, he still needed the grace of God in order to be saved. And we do too. We need to depend on Him. If you need to respond to the invitation tonight, please do so as we stand and as we sing.